Thank you for that introduction. I know we'll be talking to y'all about some bollworm behavior in BT and non-BT cotton. So as I'm sure all y'all are aware, bollworm is a highly prolific pest of several different cropping systems, especially in North Carolina, including corn, cotton, soybeans, peanut, and others. And within North Carolina, we typically see four generations throughout the season, with the two most important being the second and third generations, which we talked about during the roundtable earlier today. So the second generation is in ear stage corn almost exclusively, and then the third generation is the one that moves into cotton. And what makes that more important is that both corn and cotton exhibit similar BT pyramids, so that those insects have multiple generations which are being selected for resistance on those crops. Specifically in BT cotton, there has been shown to be some behavioral differences. In single gene BT cotton, neonates were shown to move away from the terminal faster than they did in non-BT cotton. And there's also some preferences for diet feeding when given the choice between BT-treated diet or non-BT diet. And in recent years, we have been seeing more survivals coming through BT cotton of all different pyramids. So thinking about this from a more ecological perspective, there are several seminal ideas or theories related to foraging and diet when looking at when an insect is moving across their landscape. And thinking about a cotton plant, a larva will be moving between fruiting structures, trying to find something to feed on. And if they're detecting BT on within those fruiting structures, will they be wanting to get away from that BT moving off of the plant? And I did some work in the lab, and just being around neonate bollworm in the lab, you see them ballooning or where they silk off of things to try and get away from an area. And I was curious if that was something that was exhibited in within a BT cotton crop. And also in some instances, you'll see density-dependent behavior in different insect systems. And it all kind of comes down to how these larvae are utilizing what would be considered a questionable resource. So we came up with a few research questions, one of which, does the off-plant movement of bollworm differ between cotton of different BT toxin pyramids and non-BT cotton? And also, within those different BT pyramids, what are the population differences within the crop? And we hypothesized that we would see more first instars dispersing from BT varieties compared to the non-BT. You would expect them to take a little bite out of the cotton, detect that BT, and leave the plant looking for a better crop to feed on. And then we thought we would also see more larger larvae within and dispersing from non-BT cotton. Obviously, that's not very surprising. And then also, we thought we would see more larvae within and dispersing from two toxin pyramids compared to three toxin pyramids. So we set up a fairly standard small plot experiment with eight row plots, looking at seven or eight treatments depending on the last 2 years, 2016 and 2017, including non-BT, wide strike and wide strike 3, two different Bollguard 2, Bollguard 3, and then TwinLink and TwinLink Plus. We used standard agronomic practices up until late season insect, and when we put in a disruption spray of Orthene in order to get rid of beneficials and hopefully get a more bollworm establishment. And here's a figure showing the varieties that we used within our the two different years, fairly standard varieties for the upper southeast. As far as data collection, went in for 4 or 5 weeks within each season and took bollworm, both egg and larval numbers from 10 plants within each plot. And then I also put out these between row sticky boards. I took and cut out a piece of corrugated plastic and elevated it off the ground with that metal stake in order to prevent water and sand from washing over the sticky board, applied tangle trap, and then left it out there for a couple weeks before we would remove it and count the bollworm numbers on those sticky boards. and then use standard data analysis using SAS 9.4. And here's a couple more pictures showing those sticky boards. The picture on the left there is just looking down from the top of the canopy, showing the sticky board covering the entire row middle, and then a couple of gracious hourly employees helping me count them after we pulled them out of the field. So I'm going to start with showing oviposition data. Like I said, we took egg and larval counts from different plants. And over the last 2 years, we saw similar trends in the oviposition, although we saw a lot more oviposition in 2017. And surprisingly, in both years, non-BT separated out as our lowest, the variety with the lowest oviposition, with all of the BT varieties being similar to each other. And I'll touch on that again here in a few minutes. Getting into the bulk of the data, the next few figures are going to be the same like this. I've got all my varieties across the bottom, and then caterpillar number on the y-axis, either average across 10 plants or average per sticky board. And the blue bars are our counts, and orange bars are the sticky boards. And surprisingly, first instars, we didn't see any difference with our sticky boards. And when we counted the larval counts within the crop, non-BT was the same as all of our different BT varieties. So somewhat different than what we expected we would see. Getting into second instars, not surprisingly, non-BT rose to the top at that point once the larvae start developing on the crop. Wide strike kind of separated itself in the middle, although for the counts, it was the same as our Bolgar 2 varieties for those counts. But very few differences for our sticky boards for most of our BT varieties. Again, with wide strike there, separating by itself in the middle. Third instars, we see more of the same with non-BT continuing to rise to the top. Wide strike and the other two toxin varieties being somewhat in the middle. And then our three toxin varieties being down with very few larvae in both the counts and the sticky boards. When we get to the fourth instars, again, same kind of trend with non-BT, not surprisingly being higher than our BT varieties, but we did not see any differences across our BT varieties for fourth instars, both in counts and sticky boards. And then when we get to fifth instar, we started to see a few more differences on the sticky boards. Seemed like, I mean, you would expect a fifth instar may have developed all the way through the crop and would be leaving the crop in order to pupate. So we caught a few more coming off. Kind of the same trend with wide strike being numerically a little higher than the other two toxin and three toxin varieties, with Bolgar 2 and twin link varieties kind of bridging the gap between our three toxin and wide strike. I did run a regression analysis on these data to compare the sticky board numbers to plant count. So plant count here and then sticky board count on the y-axis. And a very weak correlation for first instar. There was just a whole lot of variability going on with that data. Second instar, as we start to see a little tighter correlation, still very low R-squared value though. And with a slope that's approaching 0.5, so keep that in the back of your head as we move forward. Moving to third instars, we see a little tighter correlation, and the slope is there still kind of close to 0.5. And very similar for fourth instars to what we saw with third instars. And then the same with fifth instars, very similar to the third and fourth again. So kind of wrapping everything up, for first instars, we saw similar numbers across all varieties. That was somewhat different than what we thought we might see. Again, we thought we would see more larvae coming off of first instars coming off of the BT varieties as opposed to the non-BT. For second and third instar larvae, it somewhat followed the trend of non-BT being higher than our two toxin, and then being higher than that being higher than our three toxin variety. Not too surprising there. And then fourth and fifth instars, by that point, we didn't see too many big differences a little bit with those fifth instars that were leaving the different BT varieties. There was a correlation between on and off plant numbers, so that just kind of corroborated what we did with those sticky boards to give it a little bit of merit. And luckily, regardless of the BT variety, they were all still reducing numbers compared to the non-BT. So while we may be talking about resistance development, it seems like the BT is still bringing something to the table. I brought up this idea of density dependence in my introduction and then showed you that oviposition data when the non-BT was lower than some of our BT varieties. And actually, when I was out there collecting data, I could walk into a non-BT plot with my eyes closed and know where I was just because of the smell from the frass. There was that high of larval pressure. And I would think that if I was able to smell that, a moth that was looking to oviposit would likely be able to detect that and avoid that as being a unsuitable host. And didn't seem like there was much of a density dependent for our larva. All of our trends were fairly linear in our correlations. And then something else fairly interesting that I saw that may somewhat explain those second, third, and fourth instars that were leaving the plant is we were seeing, when I was looking at sticky boards, I would see this type of thing here. So that's a third instar larva there that may have fallen off with this abscising bowl. So the larva was inside the bowl, more than likely was inside that bowl when it fell off the plant, and then tried to crawl out of that bowl, luckily onto my sticky board. So that was something fairly interesting that I haven't necessarily read about before that I would like to look into a little more. So wrapping things up with some implications, just have kind of raised some more questions that I would like to look into. Where are these larvae going? Are all of those second, third, fourth instars, are they coming off the plant with tissue, or are they leaving to try and find some more appropriate hosts? And are these larvae going to die when they come off the plant? It seems like if first instars are leaving and they hit the ground, I don't know that they would have very good odds of getting back on a plant in order to feed. And then also the need to scout all of our varieties. We saw larvae, regardless of the BT trait that we had, we saw larvae in those crops. So definitely need to get out and scout and look for those larvae in grower fields. And then something that just kind of popped into my head when I was using these sticky boards is, would this be a way of a type of scouting method that could be used if there was a way we could get a consultant or grower to stick it out in the field? I don't know that it's very likely, but with that correlation that we saw, especially for using a larval threshold where we're looking for larger larvae, maybe an easy way, it could be an easy way to conduct some scouting. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions if I have time.
Yes, there's time for questions.
Yes, sir. For this particular, I didn't record that data for this particular trial, but I have another trial with that shows, just within one variety, shows some differences in oviposition. But I didn't compare that across varieties. I mean, there was differences in the numbers that were coming off, particularly for the three toxin varieties. There were fewer larvae in there, but we were still catching some coming off of the plant. But it seemed like a fairly linear response, regardless of the BT trait. It seemed like for a certain number of larvae that we had on the plant, we would get a certain number to come off. So there wasn't a whole lot of impact of BT variety, just on sheer number that were coming off of the crop.
Question for the speaker. Thanks always. Thank you guys for being here. We resume at 4:00.